Welcome to Masters of Dispute Resolution on PodClips. This podcast is designed to offer valuable perspectives and insights to individuals engaged in the mediation process. Listeners will benefit from the experience of the profession's most accomplished mediators who share compelling stories of conflict and the lessons they have learned from handling challenging and intriguing disputes. Throughout the episodes, you will hear firsthand accounts of how conflict has impacted the lives of those involved and discover how mediation enables individuals to move forward free from the burden of ongoing disputes. The discussions on this podcast provide practical guidance on addressing and overcoming difficult issues, helping listeners achieve more satisfying outcome in mediation. Whether you're a mediator, an attorney, or someone who has participated or is considering participating in mediation, you will find actionable advice and encouragement. Your host, Len Levy, is a mediator and arbitrator with ADR Services, Inc., a leading provider of alternative dispute resolution. Len brings extensive experience, having litigated complex cases for over 30 years before transitioning to mediation in 1998, and has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution beginning in 2014. Len Levy's expertise and dedication set the stage for insightful conversations and meaningful learning for all listeners. And now, your host, Len Levy.
Thank you, Daryl. Welcome and thank you for joining us in Season 6 of Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast designed to add tools to your mediation toolbox. We're brought to you by ADR Services, Inc. and the American Institute of Mediation. Now, in each episode, you have been hearing and will continue to hear today story about a conflict, the impact it had on the lives of the parties involved, how resolution was achieved, and the lessons to be learned both from the conflict and its resolution. Now, many of the details may be altered, many details that took place in the original mediation may be different. And that's to maintain the essential confidentiality of mediation while still capturing the core of the conflict and its resolution. Today, we're going to be discussing a hero's injuries that probably could have been avoided and the impact it had on his life and the life of his family. The perfect person to tell that story is Lance LaBelle. Lance has been a mediator for a long time, and he is a member of the ADR Services panel of neutrals. He had a background of arbitrating cases, mediating cases, handling cases for various parties over 30 plus years, and it was with a wide variety of matters, and his specialty was insurance cases. But he has really come on as a mediator, demonstrating that he is very effective in that role. He tries not to lose sight of the goal of dispute resolution, which is to assist the parties to reach an agreement. And his skills, his mediation skills, are really finely tuned. He listens to the party, gains breakthroughs through understanding and gaining a thorough understanding of their positions and their real interests. And at times he can be very evaluative. And he also focuses, however, on building trust and having a productive working relationship with counsel and their clients. He looks for ways to expand the pie and employ creative solutions to reach a settlement. And I think that's going to be reflected in the story that Lance tells today. Thank you for joining us again on Masters of Dispute Resolution, Lance.
Thanks for having me, Len. Appreciate it.
Okay, So Lance and I were discussing this story, and I'm absolutely fascinated, and I think you're going to be too. So Lance, what happened?
Well, I mediated a case back in 2022, which was a fire loss to a commercial building. And interestingly, I've had quite a few fire losses, both commercial buildings and residential structures, over the years. And this one was not atypical from the standpoint of the basic commercial fire loss, but it had all sorts of intricacies that made it very complicated. It involved a Korean-owned dry chemical business that occupied a commercial space. There was the owner of the warehouse, the Korean-owned dry chemical tenant, and then there was a subtenant who was a fertilizer company. And so you have the owner of the warehouse, the Korean-owned dry chemical tenant, and then the fertilizer company that was a subtenant. And there was a fire and in the middle of the night, and a fireman, well, many firemen responded to the scene, but one particular fireman was greatly impacted by the fumes and the fire inside the dry chemical business. There was also a security guard that entered the premises, and he was also injured and inhaled some dangerous gaseous fumes. And there was one attorney representing the fireman and security guard, another attorney representing the owner of the warehouse, another attorney representing the dry chemical tenant, and then another attorney representing the fertilizer subtenant. And the basic issue or issues that I was confronted with mediating involved first the fireman security guard who had brought suit against the owner and the tenant. And as against the owner, the question was there an electrical issue that caused the fire that would have fallen within the ambit of the owner's responsibility? Or was it the storage of the chemicals that was the tenant that was the cause of the fire? And so both the owner and tenant were defendants in that case brought by their fireman and security guard. Then there were the cross suits and cases that were brought by the owner and tenant. The owner of the business saying, tenant, dry chemical tenant, you caused the fire and destroyed the warehouse. And then the dry chemical tenant suing the owner saying, no, it was the electrical issue. And the fire and cause, the cause and origin report from the fire department was inconclusive, and it could have been either cause that resulted in this fire. Then you had the subtenant fertilizer company also suing the owner of the warehouse and the tenant on those same premises theories that it could have been either cause. And to make this just even more complicated, there was the insurance coverage case that the owner of the warehouse was bringing against its carrier for allegedly not properly paying the claim for the building loss and business interruption.
Wow. So you have this set up with just an incredible number of seemingly individual suits with everybody pointing fingers at everyone else. In the middle of this, though, you mentioned the security guard and the fireman. What was the basis of their claim and against whom?
So the fireman and security guard were bringing claims against both the owner and the tenant, the dry chemical tenant. The claim against the owner predicated on a potential electrical issue that would be the owner's responsibility, and the claim against the tenant, dry chemical tenant, predicated on the storage of the chemicals and that as a potential cause of the fire. And the fireman and security guard had one lawyer representing both. There was also an uncle who was an attorney who was there, the uncle of the fireman, who was whispering in his ear through the course of the mediation. And so there was a little bit of tension, I suppose you could call it, between the lawyer for the fireman and the uncle attorney for the fireman. So that was another dynamic here.
The how the fireman was injured and how the guard was injured, how did that happen, and what injuries were they suffering from?
Well, it was really not so much being burned, which is a risk, of course, that firemen assume. It was the dry chemicals that were in the tenant's business that created fumes, and they inhaled those and allegedly became sick. The fireman much more than the security guy. The fireman was no longer able to work as a fireman, or at least that was his claim, and so that was pretty devastating in terms of potential damages. The security guard, lesser so. He could probably still function as a security guard and still work into the future. The interesting component of this was that there is a fireman's rule in California, because obviously firemen assume a certain risk when they're fighting fires. But this particular dry chemical tenant was not properly permitted to operate the type of business that they were operating. And when you create risks that are either beyond the scope of what a fireman would normally encounter, or potentially an illegal operation, one that's not even operating under proper authority, then you can arguably get around the fireman's rule, which would otherwise say you're barred under assumption of the risk. That's the risk you assume as a fireman. But there were some unique factors that were part of this case.
My experience in dealing with firemen, and I've known quite a few, they take all kinds of precautions before entering buildings and gather as much information. They just willy-nilly jump off the fire truck, put up a ladder, climb in the second story window. Did the firemen take those kinds of precautions, or did that have any impact on the dispute?
Well, it did, and that's a great point. What I learned is that firemen actually know quite a bit about the business they're entering before they even entered, because there's a registration of sorts where they are able to tell what kind of business is operating there and what risks they might encounter. In this particular instance, that information, for whatever reason, was not available. I don't know if it was because there was not the proper certification or permit process or whatever, but the allegation was that the firemen that entered the building did not appreciate the risk that they were assuming. And of course, the defense was going the other way and saying, well, it's a dry chemical warehouse. You ought to be able to know that just from the name of the building and or the name of the business. And so there was a dispute over that as well.
So you have all of these moving parts, and this is pre-COVID, correct?
Yeah, the fire was pre-COVID. The mediation was during COVID.
Okay. And so was this being conducted via Zoom, or was this being conducted in person?
This was Zoom, in person. 2022 is my best recollection.
Okay. The parties present these facts to you, and you have the idea of what's going on, but did you talk to the attorneys before the mediation session?
Some of them, yes. The fireman security guard's attorney, yes. Mm-hmm. And the owner of the warehouse, yes. There were actually two attorneys for the owner of the warehouse. There was the attorney for the owner that had been appointed by the insurance company, and there was also the an attorney for the owner that was pursuing the bad faith case against the insurance company for allegedly failing to pay on the claim. Yes for the owner, and yes for the fireman and security guard, same lawyer.
We're going to be taking a break now, and when we get back, what we're going to talk about is what information that you went into the mediation armed with, and how you used that information in terms of setting up how you approached it. This is Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and I'm chatting with Lance LaBelle. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back soon.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California. Leveraging technology to drive resolution, ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitration, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and we're chatting with Lance LaBelle, who has just conveyed the nature of this dispute and described that he was able to contact some of the attorneys in advance of the hearing. Lance, what came out of those pre-mediation session conferences?
Well, I think the first thing that was important to know was that theoretically the firemen and security guards' demands were going to eat up all the insurance coverage. And that was going to pose a problem, because not only did we have the fireman's personal injury claim and security guard's personal injury claim, but we had the owner making a claim for damages against the dry chemical tenant. And of course, the owner was claiming that there were unreimbursed damages that the carrier, its first party property carrier, had not yet or wouldn't pay for. And so the owner had an affirmative claim and a claim for contractual indemnity under the lease against the tenant, claiming that it was the tenant's fault and therefore there was express contractual indemnity owed. And there was a claim that the tenant didn't name the owner as an additional insured under the policy. So there was all of that going on. And then you had the tenant, Korean dry chemical tenant, saying, owner, it was an electrical issue, and so you're responsible for the damage to our business. And then you had, of course, to the extent that there had been some payments made on these insurance claims, potential subrogation by carriers who could have paid on the first-party property claims. And so now you're wondering, well, do we have to wrap those up, because subro is usually handled by different units within the carrier? Are they going to be part of the mediation? Are folks going to be willing to waive their subrogation claims so we can just focus on what I've already described? And I learned the answer to that was probably yes, that if we could get things wrapped up, the subro would fall by the wayside, thankfully. And then I learned what the policy limits were and how much money ideally there would be to work with in terms of insurance. And then I went to trying to figure out, How do you mediate this in one day with potentially four different mediations built into one? The fireman fund security guard claim against the owner and tenant suing each other, the subtenant fertilizer company suing the owner and tenant, and then the owner's insurance coverage case against its own carrier. There were four mediations, and how do you tackle that? So that's what I was immediately grappling with.
Okay, so having the conversations with the attorneys kind of gave you a preview of that, I would imagine, right?
Yes, yes.
So, but you're still facing the unmistakable fact that you are herding cats. Keeping things moving forward is a challenge in that situation. How did you meet that challenge? How did you organize this?
Well, it was about 2:30 in the morning, the night before the mediation, when I sat up in bed and went, I'm not going to be able to use a standard positional bargaining process and conduct four mediations in the course of one day. And so I thought, I'm going to suggest another process and see whether I can get buy-in at the inception of this mediation. And so what I wanted to do, if folks were amenable, is to do private caucusing and get a sense of where people might land ultimately. Now, some of these lawyers I knew, but some I did not. With lawyers that you know, it's easier because there's trust, and they may have those kinds of endgame type discussions. With lawyers you don't know, they may buy into that approach or not. But fortunately, when I got to the mediation and suggested that that's how we do it, and I get a sense of what people really need to settle this case. And when I do it, I don't always talk about bottom lines or top dollars. If I back people into a corner, then when it comes time to perhaps make a mediator's proposal, I don't have as much leeway to do that. And so I will say it's okay to use a phrase by my friend Mike Bell Mages, it's okay to lie to me a little bit. And so I will say that, and it's okay. And so I do have these private caucuses. I chat with all of these various parties in council and get a sense of what they would settle for. And I'm talking neighborhood, not exact top dollars, bottom lines, but a neighborhood. And I thought, if I could do that, instead of conducting four mediations and going back and forth, we're never going to do it that way, maybe I can construct a proposal that is a global resolution of all these claims, and maybe we can get it settled that way. So that's what we did.
So the preparation of the proposal harkens to some things that are done in, for example, environmental claims, and it was most effective in Camp David, in peace accords between the Egyptians and the Israelis. It was essentially using a single negotiating text where a mediator or one of the parties can draft a proposed agreement, and then each of the parties give input as to things they can't live with that's in that agreement, and then you keep going back and forth as to how to revise it. Was that essentially what you were doing?
Yeah, I think that's a very good analogy as to the approach, and what you're doing is pre-squeezing ideas, pre-squeezing what might work, and what ultimately you're hoping to do is to make everybody begrudgingly say yes to what you're proposing. And I generally do it with double blind responses, or in this case, it was more than double. We had lots of stakeholders. Mm-hmm. And so that is how we did it. But the unique thing about this that was most surprising to me is that we settled the case without using even a full day. Any other approach where you're conducting four mediations in one day and going back and forth with offers and demands would never have resulted in a settlement. But because we had these private caucuses and pre-squeezed ideas and numbers and such, ultimately I was able to put a proposal out and in the course of the mediation get folks to buy in and say yes. And it wouldn't have happened with any other process.
One of the things that you had alluded to earlier was that there was this uncle of the fireman. Did he help? Did he hurt? Whatever the process that you were going through.
I don't think he was helpful in the sense of facilitating a resolution. I think the lawyer for the fireman and security guard felt that this was within his domain to provide recommendations and advice, and I think the uncle was probably there, not on the same page with the lawyer for the fireman and security guard, and so he was whispering in the ear of the fireman But I think there was probably a personality conflict between that uncle attorney and the plaintiff's attorney.
Just to add to a dynamic that you may or may not have gotten involved in, I've experienced this in the past, and I've heard from a lot of mediators who've experienced this. And one of the ways of dealing with it is to simply ask them to leave. But that's apparently not what you did.
I didn't, and you're walking a tightrope because you're not wanting to offend the fireman and ask his uncle to leave. But one of the things you can do, and I know you do, is sometimes I will pull someone aside, whether it's an attorney, whether it's a claims adjuster, whether it's a party. And there's all sorts of reasons why that happens. It could be insurance coverage issues where I need to talk to a party about contribution, all different reasons. But sometimes I can pull someone aside, and if I can develop a rapport, the rapport is over Zoom is not quite the same rapport you might have if you were sitting across the table from someone. And so while I'm a big fan of Zoom and how it allows people to participate from all sorts of places and be dialed in as opposed to telephone standby or flying in, I think it's great. There are times when that you don't have quite the personal connection you might have. If you're sitting, this was an example of where I think, while I was able to talk to the uncle and do that privately, it would have been better in person than it was over Zoom. But we got over the hurdle enough to get to the end game.
Was there any particular party in this whole mix that was that you perceived as a major impediment? I mean, you've done construction cases, and I know, you know, you're talking about things like the critical path. You know, you can't put up a roof until you have the framing up, for example. And if you get a party, and I'm not suggesting it was the uncle, but I'm saying if you get somebody who's saying, no, you have to hold out for this or you have to hold out for that, that person may be in the critical path of reaching an agreement. There may be a particular party who's absolutely essential to breaking the logjam. Who was it in this case? Was it the fireman? Who was it?
Yeah, definitely the fireman. I had to catch the biggest fish first, and the big fish was the fireman's claim. And potentially, that fireman's claim could eat up all the insurance coverage if we couldn't compromise that claim and leave some insurance money for some of these other claims. And so I had to start there, and I had to see if I could get the fireman's claim within a range that would leave insurance money or as much insurance money as possible to try and deal with these other claims. So that was the starting point, and to have that frank discussion and get a sense of what might get it done. And then, knowing that, go over and talk to the insurance folks for both the dry chemical tenant and the fertilizer, the owner warehouse lawyer and the dry chemical tenant, and get a sense of what those carriers might be willing to pay. Now I'm just dealing with that mediation first, the fireman and security guy, which is more of a tag along, and then the owner and tenant. I'm dealing with that one first, because that's the first domino that has to fall. And so if I can get that and figure out how much money might be left, then I know what I have to work with, at least in terms of insurance dollars, mm-hmm. with the rest. And so, and that's, of course, carving out for the moment the insurance coverage case against the carrier that the owner of the warehouse had. So there was a priority. And the priority was fireman, security guard versus owner and tenant. What, just treat that as a separate mediation for the moment. What's it going to take to get that settled? What kind of money might be available from those carriers? Get a sense of that. Know what might be left. And then deal with the owner, tenant, and subtenant fertilizer against owner. Deal with that. And then on a separate track, is that insurance coverage case, and that is not necessarily all contractual benefits. That's extra contractual. That's a whole separate deal, but lots of moving parts to try and get your arms around, but there had to be a strategy, and that was the strategy.
Did you prepare the initial draft of the of what I'll call the single negotiating text?
I sent an email to one of the lawyers that outlined what I perceived as what the numbers would look like that would be going back and forth and who they'd be coming from. And then the lawyer prepared what was a memorandum of understanding for folks to execute. And I generally don't prepare settlement agreements. I'll have the lawyers do that, but I will identify key components of what might go in the settlement agreement. And with always the caveat, there's obviously other terms and conditions that you'd be inserting. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I do it.
The experience that you had that allowed you to pull the right tools out of the toolbox, it's really inspiring. What can I say? And results like this don't happen by accident. Knowing what tools to use is really the key, and applying those tools really the key. So we're going to be right back. Take a break now, and we'll be right back after a word from the American Institute of Mediation.
Hi there. We hope you're enjoying another fascinating episode of Masters of Dispute Resolution. Has the show ever made you think about becoming a mediator and doing the work you're hearing these experts doing? Are you thinking about it right now? Imagine a career where you're working to help people in conflict find win-win solutions. The sense of purpose you'll feel can easily be heard in the voices of the guests on this show and its host, expert mediator Len Levy. Or maybe you're a mediator already looking to build your skill set in order to pull off some of the brilliant and out-of-the-box solutions that these guests are talking about. That's where we come in. We're the American Institute of Mediation, and we train mediators of all levels. We're the place you come to learn the basics of mediation or to raise your game in the field. We specialize in mediating commercial and litigated cases, but we teach the skills in such a way that will work in any setting. Our slogan is world-class training for the complete mediator, because we feature the world's best mediation trainers and we prepare you for all aspects of being a professional mediator. Find us online at AmericanInstituteOfMediation.com and browse all of our courses that are available for streaming on demand. You can watch our courses at your convenience, at your desk, on a plane, or in bed in your jammies. We'll see you in the mediation world soon.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and my guest is Lance LaBelle, who has just revealed a very innovative approach to settling a case that was so tangled in terms of issues that it called for something special, and Lance delivered. So, Lance, as you were telling this story, I was thinking about the movie City Slickers, where Curly said, you know, you've got to find that one thing. And it was like, it's different for everybody. In this one thing here, it was not just the tool that you used, but why you used it and how you decided to take it up with the parties in the order that you did. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. I think the one thing here was the process. I think any other process wouldn't have worked, certainly not within a day. We would have needed several days to go back and forth and do a more standard negotiation. The thing I'm always thinking about, grappling with, is as a mediator, I don't want to hijack the negotiations, and I don't impose my will on folks. I'll make suggestions as to approach, and very often the attorneys will say, what do you suggest? Sometimes they'll ask me, what do you think we should demand, or what do you think we should offer? And of course, I don't know what their destination is, so it's difficult to talk about stops along the way. But at a certain point, sometimes I do get a sense of what the destination is. And if they want advice, we can talk about what might be an approach in terms of offers and demands, but and whether that involves singular numbers or brackets or a mediator's proposed bracket with double blind response. There's all sorts of different ways to kind of move the process along. But the one thing here was the process. The one thing that I have learned, it was a takeaway in this case, but it's a takeaway in so many of the mediations that all of us conduct and are involved in, is the importance of setting the table before the mediation, the plaintiff getting a demand out with the supporting evidence, so that folks know, the people that are going to write the checks know what they're evaluating, and secure the authority to go to the mediation. And that happened here. It was important that it did. But the other takeaway that I had is, this is not just this mediation, but so many of them, when the demands come in the stratosphere, at a level that may not be helpful in terms of the process and the negotiations, or the converse of that is where the demand comes in at a certain level, and then plaintiff's counsel says, well, my demand is X, but I have only a small amount that I can move. That's the other side of that equation. Ideally, you'd like something that's a happy medium, where someone comes in and they're not so outrageously high that it creates dissension and problems on the other side, but they're not so low and indicating that I have very little room to move, where the other side doesn't see an actual negotiation because there's very little movement. And so that was one of the aspects of this that needed to be addressed, was that I needed to get a demand from counsel for the fireman and security guard not so high that they were going to eat up all the insurance coverage, but nevertheless left some room for negotiation because the other side wanted to see a negotiation. And so that was a first step. That was a key. It was getting a reasonable demand, leaving some insurance money on the table to work on some of these other claims, and then through private caucusing, getting a concept of where folks were likely to land, which then ultimately led to the proposal.
The fireman, you had indicated, was more seriously injured. And I don't know whether you'd mentioned this about his being unable to work as a fireman anymore. If that was true, what kind of attitude did he come into the mediation with? And did that attitude have to change in order for a resolution to be reached?
Well, he was consulting with his wife during the course of the mediation. I didn't see her in the Zoom session, but I know that they were consulting. And while I knew that this was obviously emotional for him, because he was talking about settling a case that would help support his family, he had children as well, he was very low-key and respectful, not overly emotional in terms of outwardly, in terms of how he was presenting himself. And so I would say that he was a pleasure to work with, frankly, because he was really deferential to his lawyer, while he had his uncle, of course, talking to him in his ear. But I think he was looking for direction from counsel, and not there pronouncing expectations. The lawyers were really handling that, and he was ultimately willing to defer to numbers that left us with enough insurance money to be able to work on the other claims.
It sounds like he was being pragmatic and driven less by emotions. And it's always difficult when you encounter a party such as this plaintiff. And I'm not trying to paint a broad brush necessarily, but firemen are generally, they're giving people. They're putting their life on the line to protect us and things of that nature. That kind of protection, a feeling of protection, could very well have been an element in this case, and driven settlement and driven no settlement if those emotions were not tempered by his being able to analyze this somewhat dispassionately. It sounds like either you or his attorney or his wife or maybe even his uncle contributed to that. Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, I think there. Yes, I think that's right. I do think that he was able to look at the situation practically. The other thing that was in play here is his lawyer was able to explain to him, and I made a point of this, the insurance companies for the defendants couldn't pay him all of their policy limits and leave no money for the other claims. When you have a multiple claimant insufficient limits scenario, under Strauss versus Farmers, the carriers can't exhaust all their limits and then leave their insured hanging out there for other claims unless their insurers were to consent to that approach and say, okay, with the advice of independent counsel, not carrier retained counsel, with the advice of independent counsel, go ahead, pay all the limits to the firemen. We understand we're bare as to other claims. But that wasn't gonna happen. There were no independent attorneys to provide that advice, except for the owner had an independent attorney with regard to the bad faith case against his carrier. And so I was able to say, if you take all the insurance money, we're not going to get this done because the carriers need to reach a global. And that was helpful in getting the demand and expectations down within policy limits so that there was money to work with in settling the other claims.
Sounds like it was that was the, kind of the one thing that needed to happen for that logjam to break. Because if he insisted on, my life is over, I can't do this, I can't do my chosen profession anymore, somebody's going to have to pay for this and pay big. It happens often where somebody just says, you know, it's not fair to me, it's not fair to my family. And there's something like akin to holding on to an ice cube so tightly, thinking that at the end of the day, you're going to have an ice cube instead of just a hand of water. Okay, so the ability to manage expectations with respect to the firemen, very important. What about the expectations of the carrier for the insured that paid? And was that the owner's carrier that paid the major portion?
Yes, as a matter of fact, and I didn't give you that fact, but you're actually right. It was the owner's carrier that had the bigger policy. And so they exhausted a fair amount of that policy combined with the carrier for the dry chemical tenant. And those, a portion of each of their limits were paid to satisfy the fireman and security guard claims. And then we had to deal with the owner's claim against the dry chemical tenant and the dry chemicals tenant back against the owner. And those carriers with still money left under their policies to help settle those claims, including the contractual indemnity, failure to name as an additional insured claim that the owner of the warehouse had against the dry chemical tenant. And so the pieces fit because we had the insurance money and we had a fireman who was willing to compromise at a level that allowed us to have enough money to satisfy other claims. And then the bad faith case was a separate animal. And that was actually the easier case for me to get involved in because I understand insurance coverage and was able to negotiate that and help the folks get that resolved as well.
Wow. You get a case like this, and it's very much like a construction case. You have multiple parties with multiple claims, multiple cross claims, etc. And very often, you do not have the kind of opportunity that you recognize to, it's called cut the Gordian knot, okay? Just slice through all of it to get to a resolution that is, it's satisfying to the parties, I think, in most cases, because it's what's possible. And you helped the parties achieve what was possible. Was that your sense of it as well?
Yeah, it's so interesting to me that I can mediate a case like this where you wonder, how in the heck are we going to get this done? It's got so many dynamics and tentacles. How are we going to do it? And then the very next day, I can mediate a case where the parties are $5,000 apart and it's not settling. And it's absolutely astounding how and it comes under the heading, you never know what's going to happen. And I try and stay optimistic when I mediate cases until there's reason not to be. But I try and stay optimistic because there are so many mediations. I don't think the case has any chance of settling, but I don't let that permeate the discussions. And lo and behold, we get to the end and we get it settled. And so I just say, you never know. That's my motto.
Well, one thing I do know, we're out of time. And I'm sorry for that, because I'm really enjoying this discussion. And it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, Lance. And as we wrap up, how is it best for audience members to contact you to either book a mediation or simply discuss whether mediation is possible?
Yeah, through the ADR Services website, they can contact my case manager. And then they can also look at my website, which will have contact information. There's a button to click and send me an email. And so they can chat with me that way. But all of my mediations will get handled through ADR Services.
Okay, so your case manager is Susanna?
Correct, yes.
And it's what, SusannaTeam@ADRServices.com?
That works perfectly, yes.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very, very much once again for this conversation, and I know we'll have you back. I know you will. And thank you, Daryl Wayne, our engineer and producer. I'm your host, Len Levy, and this is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io, powered by Infogen Labs, Inc. I hope you continue to enjoy the stories we bring you. And in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.